most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
Hour number two of Sports Talk begins. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Hyams. Sports Talk today is here at Oak Ridge Nissan, right where the Turnpike meets up with Illinois Avenue. And Jimmy, today is the perfect opportunity for at least two people to become finalists in the Big Ticket 2020, as we are doing this once again with the prize that just continues to get bigger and better one year to the next. But if everything is able to go off, as we certainly hope it does, our grand prize winner will be set up for the fall and beyond.
Well, and you put that very eloquently as well, John. But, yeah, absolutely. Hey, you got a chance to win season tickets for Tennessee football, men's and women's basketball, baseball, softball. You got a chance to hopefully sit in a skybox with a couple of sports animal personalities. Then you've got Titan season tickets. You got Ice Bears. What an incredible prize. And hopefully we will be able to have all of those events coming up this fall and into the winter, so that the winner of this will have a chance to really enjoy a lot of sports.
So the only way that you can get registered this afternoon is to poke your head in here at Oak Ridge Nissan. And again, great savings as they have their Christmas in July sale. But we've got the word that you text in to 68683. You must do that before 7 o'clock. And we will have two finalists from those that text in and register today. So it is the Big Ticket 2020 presented by Food City as Sports Talk continues from Oak Ridge Nissan.
And, John, let's hear now from Bob Stoops. Bob Stoops has been nominated for the College Football Hall of Fame as a coach. He'd had a terrific run at Oklahoma. He took that job after being a highly successful defensive coordinator at Florida and helping them win a national championship. He's 152 games above 500, which is pretty remarkable. Not many coaches have been able to do that. But we had a chance to catch up with him. He was actually driving to Florida on his way to play golf against somebody named Steve Spurrier. Might have heard of him, but that's where he was headed. So we caught up with Bob Stoops, and here is that conversation.
Coach, you've been nominated for the College Football Hall of Fame as a coach. What does that mean to you?
Well, it means a great deal. I've just got great respect for our profession and for what we all do, you know, as coaches at every level. And, you know, I always humble about it, and realize that as a product of a lot of great players and assistant coaches, and so I administration, you know, support staff. So I was helped in a lot of ways. So, you know, hopefully it's a reflection on all of those people.
You coached under some great coaches, Hayden Fry, Dick Crum, Bill Snyder, Steve Spurrier. Was one more influential to you than the other?
Well, at different stages of my life, they were all incredibly influential. You know, biggest break of my life was getting an opportunity to play at Iowa. And then Bill Brazier and Coach Fry, you know, Bill Brazier was my defensive coordinator, that they arrive and give me an opportunity. And then Coach Snyder gave me a huge opportunity to be a coordinator. And then, you know, the finishing touch was Steve Spurrier. You know, he and I are very close and very similar in personalities and how we really are as people. So being able to be with him those 3 years really shaped me in a great way. I believe to be a head coach, and in fact, everything, you know, the way I brought it to Oklahoma, really we tried to emulate Florida in about everything that we did. So being there was kind of the finishing touches for me.
Does it surprise you that one of Steve Spurrier's best friends was a guy that was a defensive coordinator?
No, not really. but in fact, I'm working my way over to the beach to meet him today, and we'll probably be golfing the next couple of days. So we've just been great family friends, and his wife Jerry and my wife Carol are very close as well. So, it's a great friendship for sure.
You grew up in a football family, obviously, and your dad was a longtime high school football coach. What do you think it would mean to him to see that you have been nominated for the College Football Hall of Fame?
Oh, he'd be very proud. My dad was, just had great respect for our profession and the way we do things. And so I know he'd be very, very proud and happy and for us. But just as much he'd be happy as the family man that I am, I think would probably matter more to him than this.
You were 152 games over 500. You won a national championship. You won 10 Big 12 titles. Bob, there are not a lot of coaches that can say they were 152 games over 500. That's got to be a mark that you're proud of.
I never paid much attention to numbers or where I was in any ranking. In fact, the day, the game when I became the all-time winningest coach in Oklahoma's history, I didn't even realize it. You know, during the season, I pretty much stay away from the media and all the, all the noise that's out there and really just try and concentrate, on the game and what's coming. And then I found out after the game, the athletic director, Joe Castiglione, a great friend of mine, presented me with the game ball. And I was absolutely unaware that win made me the all-time winningest coach. So I just... certain things, just don't add up to me or just don't, I don't really keep up with them. It's just my having a good time and my enjoying it and my, treating my players fairly and helping them grow as people, and enjoying the process is really where my concentration always was.
We talked about you growing up in a football family, and one of your younger brothers, Mark Stoops at Kentucky, has done a whale of a job. He had a 10-win season. Their first 10-win season since 1977. Then he won 8 games with a wide receiver at quarterback last year. I bet you're pretty proud of what he's done at Kentucky.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, very excited and proud of Mark and the job he's doing. And you got to give credit, too, to Mr. Barnhart, their athletic director, too, early on having patience with Mark, allowing him to build the program the right way. Not how so many people want to have instant turnover or believe, everything turns around in 2-3 seasons. And that's not the case. Sometimes it takes a while to build it and build it correctly. And I think Mark has built it in his administration the right way to last and to continue to have success. And they're having it. So I'm very, very proud of Mark.
Our guest, Bob Stoops, he's been nominated for the College Football Hall of Fame as a coach. Bob, I want to take you back a few years. Tennessee and Oklahoma had a 2-game series. First game, Oklahoma handled the ball. Second game, Tennessee was up 17-3 in the fourth quarter, and a guy named Baker Mayfield led a great comeback. What do you remember most about that game in Neyland Stadium?
One, how loud it was. I think we set they there at Tennessee set a record for noise decimals in a game or something. I remember hearing that after the game, and I believed it because it was hard to communicate as loud as it was. And then I can remember really Baker coming into his zone and really Lincoln Riley coming into his zone. That was Lincoln's first year with us at Oklahoma. And we're still finding our way a little bit early in the season. And there in the fourth quarter, they found their stride. Lincoln calling the plays and Baker executing them and making some big plays. And then, the things that stick out in my mind, the great catch and run by Sterling Shepard to get the ball in the end zone. Mm-hmm. And then, the interception to finish the game in overtime. So, I remember in the game locker room after the game how excited I was because through so many years, I don't know, I mean this in a humble way. We hadn't had to come from behind in the fourth quarter very often and win it in overtime, So that was one of the few times that happened in my career. And I was, just really elated that the players hung in there and had a tough time of it for 3 quarters. And then we found a way in the fourth quarter away from home at a huge crowd that was rowdy and loud. And we handled it, and came through. So that was fun to finish that way.
Looking back, is it hard to believe that Baker Mayfield was a former walk-on?
It is hard to believe, you know, that people probably only because of maybe his size, you know, overlooked him or didn't give him the opportunity. But I was elated when I knew he, you know, when he walked up to me and said he wanted to be part of our team in that first meeting in the second semester when he transferred to OU, because I had watched him compete and win at Texas Tech. So I told him, I said, you're going to have every opportunity to be our starting quarterback like everybody else. And I said, I'm damn glad you're here with us. And then he ended up earning the starting job eventually.
Bob, one of the great offenses you had, I'll take you back to 2008, Oklahoma averaged 51 points a game. You scored 716 points. You had 60 points in five games in a row.
Why was that? 2008.
Yeah, 2008. Why was that offense so special?
Many things. Kevin Wilson was the offensive coordinator, and I thought is a great, great coach, and he's been at Ohio State now the last few years. So Kevin Wilson directing it all, and then of course the player Sam Bradford was such an exceptional player. You know, you got Sam Bradford throwing the football. We had DeMarco Murray, one of our running backs, was an exceptional player. You had guys, you know, like Trent Williams at offensive tackle. We had three, four great receivers, and Jermaine Gresham, a first-round tight end. So we had guys everywhere that were really talented and good players, and Kevin Wilson did a great job utilizing them all.
You work with Mike Leach, and he's had success at Texas Tech, Washington State. Now he's at Mississippi State. How do you think he'll fare in the SEC?
Oh, Mike's done well everywhere he's been. He's not a one-hit wonder, or not like he just did it a couple years. Mike's been successful everywhere he's been, so there's no reason to not expect him to do well at Mississippi State. In fact, I'm sure he will.
Okay, Bob, I got one more question for you. You said you're going to play golf with Steve Spurrier. Has he ever given you a 3-foot putt?
Oh, no, no, no. Those aren't, you're lucky to get one that's about 6 inches. You get a little tap in, he'll give it to you. Other than that, no, you've got to putt them out. And that's how coach is big on putting them out and counting them all up.
Have you had a pretty good record against him in golf?
Oh, no, no. He beats me a heck of a lot more than I've ever beat him. So, He's always been a really good player, and I've always been just kind of a so-so, you know, good to average player.
That's Bob Stoops, the former head coach at Oklahoma. Of course, he was a defense coordinator at Florida under Spurrier in the late 1990s. He also was the head coach general manager of the Dallas Renegade of the XFL, which folded. But that was our conversation with a guy that I am certain is going into the College Football Hall of Fame.
Yeah, it was, I think, a very entertaining conversation, very informative. Great to hear some of the stories he told, especially what it's like to play a round of golf with Steve Spurrier, which not surprising at all for him to confirm, I'm sure, what were your thoughts going into those questions, that round of questions that you had for him. But rightly so, to be proud of his brother and the job that he's done in Lexington. And I just really, I was so surprised that he actually came back and was a part of that XFL. But hey, I'm sure that there was a nice check that was waiting on him as long as they were solvent. And now I guess he gets to go back to doing exactly what he wants to.
Yeah, which is go play golf and in retirement and enjoying life. And, you know, he was coaching at Oklahoma. He wasn't one of those coaches that went from 6 a.m. to midnight. I remember reading articles about him where he felt like sometimes if you worked that many hours, it would be counterproductive, that maybe the coaches would get too tired. He felt it was important to have a family life. He felt it was important for coaches to spend time with their wives and with their kids. And so oftentimes they would be home for dinner, which in some programs is unheard of. But that was the way he felt like he should do it. And, God, how do you argue with that, with the record he put together at Oklahoma?
Absolutely. That's Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. We'll get a break. We've got more coming your way. Sports Talk today is at Oak Ridge Nissan, right here where the Turnpike meets up with Illinois Avenue. Come take advantage of their Christmas in July sale, saving so ginormous, It's like Christmas in July. Lowest prices of the year. New Sentra starting at just $14,688. New Rogue or Altima, you choose from only $18,688. Make the short 10-minute drive from anywhere to save thousands here at Oak Ridge Nissan. And don't forget to come get the word that you text to 68683 for the Big Ticket 2020. We'll have two finalists from today's registration. You must text that in before 7 o'clock. Sports Talk continues from Oak Ridge Nissan on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Thanks for listening and making 99.1 The Sports Animal number one for sports conversation at work.
Sports Talk continues with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. And today we are at Oak Ridge Nissan, right here where the Turnpike meets up with Illinois Avenue. And as we talked about with Jesse Smithy, who joined us last hour, today was the Knoxville Football Officials Association Media Day for high school football. And, Jimmy, it was something to see so many coaches and players on hand at Three Ridges Golf Course, which they do such a great job of just managing the event. It's a full morning, and then, of course, there's some golf to follow, but it was a fun morning to be out there. And as Jesse was talking about, just have the conversation be much more about football than what ifs.
Yeah, exactly. And they had a tremendous lineup, coaches from all over Knox County and the surrounding area that were there. I guess as far away as Granger County, Lenoir mm-hmm. City. So it was great to have that kind of a turnout. And I know you had a chance to catch up with a number of coaches.
That's right. And so while there were a couple of what-if questions that filtered into our conversation, one of the coaches I caught up with this morning is Powell's Matt Lowe.
Take me through what this year has been like, trying to keep tabs with your players as they finished school away from school and how they've handled such a unique situation.
You know, and I think they've all, you know, in one way or another have processed everything that's happened a little bit differently. You know, our message has continued to be as clear as we can to them. Guys, we're here for you. We love you. Let us know what we can do to help support you. You know, there was the couple of months there where, you know, nobody could really leave the house. There wasn't a lot of communication. We did what we could to text and every now and then do some Zoom meetings and calls just to try and communicate and see their faces so they could see us. And then obviously once June got here, we were at least able to get them back on campus. And you know, that was huge. You know, everybody talks about the lifting weights and the running. For so many of these kids, for us as coaches, that didn't have anything to do with it. Let's just be back around our boys. You know, let's be there for them. Let's let them know that we love them and we care about them. And you know, that we're here. You know, a lot of these kids experience different things, whether it's at the house or whether it's what they're seeing and what's coming into their life through social media, through TV. You know, they're seeing so many negatives, it certainly seemed, and confusing things right now. They didn't have answers. And, you know, not that we have answers, but at least we know, at least we could tell them, hey, guys, we're confused with you. You know, this isn't a you situation. This isn't a, you know, something that you at 15 or 16 don't understand. We don't understand it either. So we're all in this thing together. We're here for you. If you get frustrated or confused or, you know, we're here with you to go down this road. And so I think that's a lot of the message as you kind of came through it there early on. And yeah, you're trying to get them a little bit stronger and a little bit faster and all those things. But more important than anything, you just want to be that consistency for them. And so many of these kids, the great thing football provided for me when I was that age that provides for these young men is the structure, it's the discipline, it's those things where they know there's a band of guys, there's a group of guys, coaches and players that they can count on a daily basis.
Is there one plan right now that's being considered by the TSSAA that you're most in favor of?
Yeah, you know, I think anything that includes playoffs, I think is good. I like the, you know, there's a lot of different options out there. And so, you know, you always want to have something that you're working toward. You know, I think right now we'd take any plan. I think right now just tell us, you know, give us a season and we're going to be happy and excited. You know, but we're all competitive people. We all want to, you know, play in the single elimination tournament at the end of it. You know, that's just who we are. It's who we are as coaches. It's who we are as Americans for the most part. We always want the trophy. And so, you know, at the same time, I think anything that has a playoff at the end of it, everybody will be happy with. I think anything that has games that can highlight some of these young men, everybody's going to be okay with.
It was one heck of a playoff last year. What did you think of that final four that was left on the Knoxville side of the bracket? I mean, whoever came out of that was going to come back with a gold trophy, don't you think?
It was. You know, there was a lot of 5A talent in Knox County last year. I mean, you know, Knox County Public Schools, you know, could have had their own tournament, and it would have been one well of a tournament, that's for sure. But, you know, congratulations to Central. They were the one to survive. They were the one that was experienced. They found a way to navigate through it. And, you know, and that's a huge testament to Coach Rosser and his entire staff of having those kids ready to play at the right times. And so, you know, I think all of us, whether it's, you know, us and West or even South Dual, we learned from that experience. And you know, we've got to be able to move forward. Don't know that every team's going to be the exact same or be as talented this year, but I don't think anyone will question that there's a lot of 5A talent in Knox County.
You had such an incredible regular season last year, and well, just an incredible season, we'll just say that. How do you bring and carry that momentum from last year to pick it up where you left off this year?
Well, and I think a lot of it's just that mindset. You know, I asked somebody the other day, you know, what are you kind of expecting? And you know, they said, well, we're expecting more. And, you know, we talked to some of these kids, and you know, I don't think anybody in the Powell community or anybody certainly within our organization was satisfied with last year. And I think it says a lot about these young men that a 12-1 season, you know, is a disappointment. And I think that's a very positive mindset for these young men to have, that you know, the expectations are so much different than maybe they have been in the past, but from what each of these kids want to see. And so, you know, I think that certainly, you know, has them working at a different level. I certainly think that last game left a bitter taste in their mouth, and they can't wait to get back on the field and get out there and try to recreate some of that magic.
What will be the biggest challenge in replacing what you lost from last year with your senior class?
Well, I think it's tough not to start with Walker Trusley. I mean, anytime you've got a 3-year starter there at quarterback, you know, stat-wise, the most prolific, you know, quarterback in Powell High School history. And so, you know, we wish all of those guys luck. I think there's 6 of them that will continue to play college football and, you know, off of last year's roster, and they were a very talented group. But the good thing is you've got a bunch of talent returning as well. And some of it's young, some of it's more experienced than others. But, you know, talent's always a great place to start. And the fact that they're out there competing with each other every single day, whether it's running sprints or doing squats, these guys love to get after each other. And so anytime you've got that competitive nature that's going on in practice, you know that's going to carry over to Fridays.
What are you most excited about for the Panthers this season?
To get back on the field, to play football. You know, I just can't wait for these young men. I mean, there's nothing like Friday nights. There's nothing like the emotion or the feeling that you get when you run out there. You know, I say it over and over, but Friday football, high school football, is so much bigger than a scoreboard, than a coach, than any team. It's a community event. And for these young men that have grown up in that community, for these young men that have had the opportunity to run through that tunnel and run out there on a Friday night when there's 4,000 or 5,000 people in the stands and it's packed, you want them to have that experience. You want them to be able to tell that story somewhere down the road. So much of high school football is about a positive experience that they're going to have, that they're going to carry with them the rest of their life. And so for me, you know, as far as my expectations for this year, I want to get to that first Friday so they can have that opportunity.
If you would, just tell me about the 2 young men you brought with you today.
Oh, okay. You know, couldn't be more proud of these 2 young men. Jordan Brown has certainly, you know, he's played a lot of football for us. He's been a starter since he was a sophomore as a linebacker. Last year, he not only started at linebacker, but certainly had some meaningful reps as a running back as well. We're expecting him to have a real big year. You know, he kind of defines what this offseason's been like as far as a kid who's kind of taking it on himself to get himself mentally and physically ready for whatever happens during his senior campaign. And I'll say the same thing about Bryson Hodges. You know, obviously physically gifted with some major tools at 6'5 and 260, and so, you know, but he's also one of the best academic kids we have on the team at a 4.28 GPA. You know, just a tireless worker. And you know, he certainly continued to develop his body as he's gone through his 4 years. Started quite a few games last year, and we're excited for him this year that he's certainly going to man that left tackle position, and you know, we think he's going to do a great job.
Well, Coach, here's hoping everybody stays safe and sound and that the season gets on track. But thank you so much. Good luck to Powell this year.
You got it. Thank you, brother. I appreciate it.
And so that is Matt Lowe, head coach of the Powell Panthers. And, Jimmy, that was just an incredible quarterfinal round on the Knoxville side of the bracket last year to see those 4 teams. Such a shame that some of those meetings took place in the quarterfinals and state semifinals, because those were championship knockdown matchups.
Yeah, and to hear Matt Lowe talk about that, what a great tournament, what a great state tournament would have been just to put those East Tennessee teams together and roll them out there. But Matt's done a tremendous job at Powell, and he was there, left, came back, and has got it going again. So got to give him a lot of credit for what he's done with Powell.
Yeah, and speaking of that quartet, they wound up 1-1 against their region rivals. So you had Powell, which won the regular season. West got the rematch. And then you had South Doyle get the regular season. Central got the rematch. And so just fantastic football out of that quartet of schools. Just to highlight how much great football there is in this part of the state. But really enjoyed the opportunity to catch up with him. Jimmy, we'll get a break. When we return, we look forward to being joined by a longtime friend of the program from Columbia.
Josh Kendall, he works with The Athletic, and he has covered South Carolina for many years.
That's next on Sports Talk as you listen to 99.1, The Sports Animal. Sports Talk continues. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Hyams. The program today is here at Oak Ridge Nissan, right where the Turnpike meets up with Illinois Avenue. Come take advantage of their Christmas in July savings. It's the biggest sale of the year. You can also get registered for the Big Ticket 2020 as brought to you by Food City. Come find out the word that you text to 68683. We'll have two finalists from today's registration. But we now head to the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline, Jimmy, as we're joined by a very special guest.
Yes, we are. Longtime friend Josh Kendall. He is with The Athletic, and he covers South Carolina. Hey, Josh, how are you?
Pretty good, Jimmy. How are you?
We're doing fantastic. Thanks for joining us. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
When I first thought of calling you, there was the Ray Tanner comment, and of course a few things have happened since then, but I do want to ask you about what South Carolina's athletic director said, and I haven't heard many ADs in the league say this. He said he thought that South Carolina might play before 15 to 20,000, if any fans at all. What did you make of that?
Well, let me give you a little backstory on that interview, because I think it illuminates what he did say. So Ray, at the beginning of this whole thing in March and April, and usually before, you know, in pre-pandemic times, very accessible, as transparent as any of his peers, is willing to sort of dig through the weeds with you and talk about options, and this is what we're thinking. And he did that a lot in March and April and even May. In the last 3 weeks, he has turned down every interview request I've sent him. And that, to me, is a sign that he doesn't want to be pessimistic publicly, and he can't be honest without being pessimistic. But he's contracted for a monthly appearance on the local radio show because it's the flagship radio. So he's got an hour every month, and I think they did a good job of getting, you know, asking the right questions. So he's on there for an hour, and I think he's trying to be as optimistic as he can. But it's clear to me, based on the things he didn't say, that he – you know, he's in the same boat with the rest of us. He's worried about football.
Were there other things that he said that got your attention other than the limited amount of fans, if any fans at all?
I think the fact that he mentioned the fans was surprising, because I believe that we're sort of, from my perspective, it seems like we're sort of past that conversation. He continued to say what he has been saying from the beginning, which is we have time, although I know we don't have as much time as we did. There was nothing there that was a huge surprise to me. There was a guy who was on the radio for an hour and said, you know, the most interesting thing he said to me was at the very end of it, when he said, yes, when we come out of this, we might have to figure out how to right-size some of the things we do in college football, meaning not pay coaches $4 million a year, or not spend $50 million on football-only buildings. But that's way down the road. Right now, we just got to figure out if they can play football in the fall.
Yeah, it seemed like those coaches' salaries might be trying to put toothpaste back into the tube. I'm not sure if you can switch that one.
Yeah, he acknowledged that they were fighting an uphill battle there. But maybe don't give the next one $5 million.
Yeah.
Josh, appreciate your time. It's good to talk with you. And when you look at what this year has been with everything shutting down in March, what have you looked at the most in terms of just what have you sought in terms of any kind of either momentum towards the season or covering those seasons that were lost? How have you gone through what has been such a different period of time for all of us?
Well, I've been pretty optimistic up until the last 3 weeks that fall football was going to be played. I have gotten less optimistic because of the numbers in certain parts of the country, including South Carolina. I think that the Gamecocks are ready to play. I think the Gamecocks could put together a football team, you know, based on – they're not releasing their numbers, but I think that their numbers are low and very manageable. I think that in operating in a bubble, South Carolina could play, and I bet you every other SEC team could play too. But I think we're – I mean, we're clearly fighting a bigger issue here. And with the state of South Carolina recording almost daily records in number of positive tests, number of deaths, amount of hospitalizations, I'm just not sure you can fight that PR battle. I'm not sure you can say we're going to bring back this number of people, or we're even, you know. Here's the thing that I keep coming back to. So on August 20th, in theory, 20,000 more college students or so are going to come to campus at the University of South Carolina. And those kids are going to do what all college kids do, which is go pack 5 points all night long. And 2 weeks later, they're going to play a football game amidst what it almost certainly will be another spike in this thing. I don't know. I'm in a pessimistic mood the last week. The news with the Big Ten didn't do anything to help it. The news with the Ivy League didn't do anything to help it. The only thing that gives me the thought that they're going to play is how much money they would lose if they don't. You know, to the tune of $40 million in media rights.
We continue to hear about the schedule, either one, being reshaped with the Big Ten, as you mentioned. There's consideration with David Cutcliffe at Duke saying that he would probably prefer the conference games only just for the control that would be in place. You would know that the other team, your opponent, was having to follow the same guidelines and parameters that had been set for your team. But when you take a look at, for instance, South Carolina and Clemson, if teams are well enough to play, it kind of doesn't make sense if they weren't to play a regularly scheduled game. Do you see potentially a partnership that exists for this year only, maybe between the SEC and the ACC, if indeed they wind up with gaps in their schedule based on games that don't take place?
I think absolutely they could do that. I mean, I'm considering Clemson a conference opponent. If the SEC says they're going to conference-only games, I think that they'll find a way to play Clemson. And I do think they'll eventually go to conference-only games. My understanding is the head coaches haven't been informed of anything of the like, but are probably planning on that. And as much as it is a testing issue, I think it's a scheduling issue, because what that gives you is sort of complete flexibility within your entity to move games around. Because I think if you do play in the fall, you're going to have some speed bumps. You're going to have some hiccups. And maybe Georgia and South Carolina can't play September the 22nd or whatever. That's not the date. But they could play on October 8th if we jiggered the schedule around. And now we don't have to worry about the fact that, Georgia was supposed to play Middle Tennessee State then or whatever. We've got complete control of the schedule, and we've got a few extra weekends to work with, and we can sort of just make it up as we go if we have to get 8 conference games in. So I think that's as big a reason as any to go to conference only, and I think that's why you'll see a lot of other people do it.
I guess Josh Kendall with The Athletic, he covers South Carolina. Josh, you mentioned $40 million in media rights. Is that the SEC distribution media rights? Is that what you were referring to?
Yeah, well, South Carolina's 2020-21 budget calls for $47 million from the SEC and NCAA. The vast majority of that is football, you know, some basketball tournament, but football media rights. So if you take out the largest chunk of that, I mean, I think you're talking ballpark $40 million if you don't have TV inventory. And that's a lot of incentive to give it a shot.
Yes, it is. Yeah. I'm in your camp right now. I think they're probably going to look at trying to go with conference games only. But I saw an article you had about the group of five opponents South Carolina's to play. Are those schools going to be scrambling?
I think they are. Those are the people I feel genuinely bad for. Right now, as of this morning, both Coastal Carolina and East Carolina, who are South Carolina's first two opponents, have not been told that they're not coming to Williams-Brice Stadium the first 2 weeks of the season. They believe they're doing that. I think, but they understand the reality, and they understand the way that momentum is moving. If those games don't happen for teams like that, and all those group of five schools end up with, you know, Coastal was supposed to get a check for $1.4 million. They'll probably get some of that, but I bet they don't get all of that. The East Carolina game was part of a home-and-home. South Carolina's scheduled to play in Greenville next year. Does that game even happen if East doesn't come here this year? So those are the people who have even less room to navigate this financially who you feel extra bad for.
Hmm. I wanted to ask you this as well. Will Muschamp mentioned before last season he thought he would have his best team, and they were like something like 4-8. I wonder if you feel like if he has a bad season, if he could get fired, or do you think the extenuating circumstances could potentially work in his favor?
I think they work in his favor. I don't see any scenario that he's not the head coach in 2021. I just don't. I think, number one, you look at the financial reality of it. His buyout's going to be a little north of $13 million. Are you going to come out of this situation? You know, even in best-case scenario at this point, you're going to take a financial hit. You're going to pay a guy $13 million to go away. Then from a PR standpoint, are you going to be able to, after talking about how much money you're losing and the fact that you might have to cut sports and you're furloughing people and you're probably going to end up laying people off, and then you're going to fire a football coach because he didn't win enough games during a pandemic? I think Will Muschamp is here for year six in 2021, no matter what happens in the fall or spring of 2020.
Josh, is it still weird at all to consider that Jake Bentley's not finishing his career in Columbia?
Yeah, that would have been like super weird under normal circumstances. I wish that was the weirdest thing going on, but I did see something that we wrote. You know, I did see something that we wrote from Utah. One of our Utah writer wrote the other day, and there's a picture of Jake Bentley in a Utes jersey, and I was like, oh yeah, I forgot about that almost. That is weird. That was, you know, the South Carolina fans. Again, let's ignore reality. I think we could all use some of that, and let's go just say normal circumstances. If South Carolina is scuffling along in the fall of 2020 and Jake Bentley goes out there and lights it up with a pretty good Utah team, man, you talk about some mad South Carolina fans, they would have been hot.
Mm-hmm. There was so much that was lost. Some seasons never got to start when everything was shut down in March. Baseball, of course, was right on the cusp in the SEC of conference play. So Tennessee didn't get to come over to Columbia. But tell me, what about Dawn Staley and the team that she had and how they were rolling? How difficult is it to see a team miss out on that opportunity to potentially raise a banner? And I think her team would have been the favorite to do so, don't you?
I think so for sure. That's, you know, they won 26 or 27 in a row. They had beaten most of the top teams. I think it was going to end up being them and Oregon in the final game, and that would have been a really good game to watch. So absolutely you hate it for them. Here's the only positive thing from that. Is the two seniors that they lost do have a national championship ring from 4 years ago, and these freshmen who are playing for them are going to get some more before they leave. She has signed she has commitments from five stars for the class of 2021.
Wow.
I mean, she's building a monster. So, yes, it stinks that they didn't get that chance, but they're going to get some more.
Josh, you mentioned the furloughs. Did South Carolina furlough a lot of people in the athletic department?
I don't know the exact number, but they have furloughed some people. They're going through that process now. Ray Tanner, Will Muschamp, Frank Martin, and Dawn all took 10% pay cuts for the year. So far, those are the biggest chunks they've taken out of the budget. But, you know, if this goes much deeper, I think South Carolina and lots of SEC schools will cut sports.
Will cut sports, okay. Yeah, Tennessee.
I think that's next on the chopping block.
Well, Tennessee hadn't done a furlough or cut anything yet. So, and I saw the projected deficit for Tennessee at a little over $10 million. That's what they're projecting. But I think that's still with football. So, man, if you don't have it, it's gonna change those dynamics, I would think, a great deal. But it would be interesting. We've seen Stanford cut 11 of their 36 sports. I would think if South Carolina's cutting them, they wouldn't be the only program in the SEC to cut sports. Would you agree?
No, I don't think so. I mean, South Carolina right now has got a men's soccer team that plays in Conference USA. Mark Burson, who's been the coach for 30-something years there, is retiring. I mean, that feels like a very fragile group right now. I could see that men's soccer team being gone. You know, I could see several sports being gone before this is over in the SEC. If it goes much deeper. Right now, if they can play a fall season and get the bulk of that TV money, I think they can weather a year. But if the cuts go much deeper, it's going to be worse.
Josh, there are still so many things to find out exactly what the reaction will be, and I don't think there's any question when you look at the record-setting number of cases that are continually reported one day to the next in so many states, that gets your attention. But is it the number of positive tests, or do you think it might be the bigger issue, complications from the virus itself in terms of impacting student-athletes that might be the biggest hurdle for sports, or how do you think? Do you think we'll see it be from state and local governments and authorities, or do you think it'll be SEC mandates or the NCAA? How do you think we might finally get to the end of knowing exactly who gets to make what call?
I think the SEC will make the decision. And you mentioned the numbers again. You know, we don't want to talk about it, but I was running, and I know, and I believe the numbers that I see that this virus is not serious, statistically serious, among the younger population. I was running the numbers with somebody last night. If you've got 65 Power 5 teams, is that right? Times 120 kids who make up the team, that's a little more than 8,000 kids. So then your statistic, you know, all it takes is one kid on a ventilator in the hospital, and this thing is all over, period. So I don't know. I mean, and that's what Greg Sankey is thinking. Greg Sankey has that, I guarantee you, has that thought every night. Mm-hmm. Kevin Warren in the Big Ten has that thought every night.
A ventilator or worse.
I don't even want to say it, but yeah.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
That's possible.
It's going to be an interesting next few days. We'll see. And I'm sure the SEC will probably have some kind of announcement within the next week. Hey, Josh, thank you so much. I really do appreciate it. Thanks for your time. And hopefully we'll get a chance to catch up with you later and talk about a football game.
Yeah, it'd be nice if I could see you this fall, Jimmy. That'd be fun.
That would be.
All right.
Hey, thank you, Josh. Appreciate that.
Thanks, guys.
Josh Kendall, he covers South Carolina for The Athletic.
That's Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. We'll get a break and be back to wrap up hour number two of Sports Talk as you listen to 99.1, The Sports Animal.
All sports, all the time. It's not a lifestyle we chose. We were born this way. 99.1, The Sports Animal.
Final segment to hour number two of Sports Talk with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson, the program here in Oak Ridge. We're at Oak Ridge Nissan, where you can take advantage of ginormous savings. And you put the jai in ginormous, don't you, Scott Groff?
I'll tell you what, we come up with some good doozers around here. Actually, our folks do. You folks listening here to Sports Talk do. You make us ginormous, you know, to be out here in Oak Ridge and be the number one dealer in the state. Is absolutely crazy, and it's so simple. People want more for their trade-in. I mean, they want up to $11,000 for that sled, whether it drives or not, or $7,000 over Kelly Blue Book, and I pay it off no matter what they owe, where other dealers just won't step into the car, and then they want to pay less for the new Nissan. I mean, how hard is that? And so that's what we do here. And to be the Wally World of Nissan dealers, you got to do it month in, month out. And we're starting July out. It's Christmas in July. Ho, ho, wholesale to the public. I got a sack full of goodies, folks. Santa Scott's ready to rock.
And you also have a winning formula, and that is people get more for theirs and pay less for yours.
That's it. Math is easy. Don't need to be stank and Einstein to make it happen. You make the 10-minute drive, bottom line is you're going to save thousands of dollars, and that's how we do it. I mean, does it get simpler?
It really doesn't. And you guys have done a great job of adjusting to individuals' concerns. If need be, there can be minimal contact, and so that's whether your car is getting serviced or you're here to check out a brand new vehicle.
Yes, MPC program, minimal personal contact, sales and service, folks. Either end, we're looking after our folks. Bottom line, and we're going to honor all the rules. If you want masks, we'll get you a mask. Whatever you want to do, if you want to buy the car, we'll work it out online. We'll do whatever. It's like Burger King around here. You get to have it your way. We make it simple, and I'll tell you, the math's even easier. It's a 10-minute drive.
10-minute drive, and it'll save you
thousands. thousands of dollars. People love it.
Scott, we appreciate it. Thank you so much.
We'll do it again.
That's Scott Gropp. We're here at Oak Ridge Nissan, right where the Turnpike meets up with Illinois Avenue. Come get registered for the Big Ticket 2020. We'll have two qualifiers, two finalists from today's registration. Come get the word that you text to 68683. Make sure you text it in before 7 o'clock. Sports Talk continues. Up next, we look forward to being joined by Laura Rutledge to start hour number 3 of the program on 99.1, The Sports Animal.